on this episode of The Africa Whisperer.
I'm so grateful for the time in which I started my career because it was a time where talent could actually rise above noise.
Hey, I'm Lee Kasumba, and this is our journey across Africa, navigating the intricate landscapes of business, culture, and global influence from the African perspective. Vanessa, I am so excited to speak to you. Like, I thought of all the ways that I could introduce you. Like, I feel like as though the thing that I love about you is that you're like this quintessential kind of like African girl, lots of sunshine, lots of love, you know, like right from when you burst into the onto everybody's screens on MTV, everybody was like, oh my gosh, who is this girl, you know? And yeah, I really can't wait to have this conversation. So thank you very much for taking time to join.
That's very, very sweet of you. Thank you so much. It means the world to me to be able to bring some sunshine wherever I go. So thank you for having me.
But I'm sure you've been told that before, right?
I definitely have. And I give God all the glory.
Amen. Amen. Coming from Arusha, just paint a picture of what that was like growing up in Arusha.
Right.
You know, I think like so much is known about like the music and the culture when you're in other parts of the continent. So for you growing up in Arusha, what was that like for you? What were your parents like? What music were you listening to?
Yeah. So first of all, I love Arusha. I cannot speak enough about how beautiful, how calm, how peaceful that city is. So for those who don't know at all, it's, you know, it's in the north of Tanzania and it's they call it the Geneva of Africa, mostly because it is the hub for, you know, they conducted the criminal tribunals for the genocide in Rwanda and Arusha. So for a long time, it was the place where people came together to bring resolve in a time where it was very much needed. But other than that, now it continues on that legacy. And it always has, because it's the port where we first land to go to the base of the Kilimanjaro, if you're climbing the mountain, or if you know, if you're going to the national parks, you know, you go from Arusha to the Serengeti and the Ngorongoro and all these amazing, you know, wonders of the world that are all found within, you know, our little part of the world. Growing up there for me, my father and my mother were diplomats, so they traveled a lot. So when we finally were stationed somewhere, you would think that my dad would opt for, you know, the more bustling city, which is Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. But Arusha felt more like a retirement city for him, but also a nice place to raise these young kids. All of us just had so much. We were just, one thing I can say for sure, there was just so much excitement. We were so excited to be in Africa, to be alive, to be a part of this great story, which was just unraveling at the time in the early 90s. I mean, in the late 90s, early 2000s, Arusha wasn't a city yet. And it was just turning into this city that it now is now. And, you know, a lot of the development happened around that time. So there's the introduction of cable satellite television. So our musical influences are now happening through Mnet and Channel O and MTV eventually.
I remember those
days. Yes, you know. Yeah. So we were just, you know, we I think had this incredible time where we were crossing over from being African with a lot of African influence, but now having the influx of international media. So I think about my husband's, you know, and we trade notes now. My husband grew up in the United States, but we are the same age. We have the exact same influences in terms of pop culture. So we listened to the very same music, the very same, we watched the very same TV shows, except for those that were just mainstream American content. But in terms of anything that crossed over and that was about urban pop culture, we have the very same influences. So growing up in Arusha was exciting. We had the best of both worlds. So much beauty in that we are part of the African continent and the cradle of mankind, and then just so much beauty and just being a part of what is just mainstream and cool and fun.
For me, being from Uganda, I spent a lot of time, like I have family that was obviously in Uganda. My uncle actually grew up in Tanzania, which is quite interesting, and all of that. And with Tanzania, the thing that everybody always, I think also in East Africa, because I thought it was so interesting that you talked about Arusha being like the Geneva of Africa, is that even in terms of like governance and so forth, you guys have one of the most renowned political leaders, Julius Nyerere, that everybody, when they think about like the epitome of a great leader, and I know that because you had mentioned your parents being diplomats and so forth, do you feel that that has impacted and influenced a lot of the life decisions that you make, coming from parents that are diplomats, a dad, who was a journalist, and being in a city like Arusha and a country like Tanzania, that in general people are so politically and socially aware?
So yes, I have a very personal affiliation to Nyerere, as my dad was his very first press secretary. And as a journalist, he was, the editor-in-chief of the Daily News at the time. And there's just so many stories he shares about his influence that, that man had on his life as a man, but also as an incredible leader and thought provoker. Like, he's done so much for the continent, so much for Tanzania. And I think when I look at my life and I think about just, how blessed I've been to just be familiar with so many different cultures and the influence of so many cultures on my life, I can attest that to having started with, a little bit of Mwalimu's influence on my father and, trickling down to where we are right now. I like to think of myself as a global citizen, as an African, having done everything that I have on the continent, but still, reaching out from the diaspora now. And just, I really, really, truly believe in just being a global citizen.
You know what this makes me think of? There was a one of the guests that I'd interviewed before, Nom Deni,
Oh, I
she spoke
love
about how
her.
everything that she's amazing, right? We were talking a lot about her family in the previous conversation, and she literally mentioned, she started to talk about how people would call her and say to her, "You know what? You're just like your grandparents," because she was raised by her grandparents, And we got into this conversation about how we stand on the shoulders of our ancestors and, people from before. So for you, it's sounding like your life literally is that, like with the way that your dad was so integral and connected to a lot of the great things that came out of Tanzania, you becoming a social activist. Do you ever have times where you sit there and you're kind of like, wow, this is actually the life that I was meant to be living? Does it ever like kind of dawn on you?
Oh my goodness. When you mention it now, it does. But I don't, when you're busy existing and living and fully like filling in these roles that just come naturally to you, you don't take stock like that. But now that you mention it, it does absolutely feel like a path that has had its imprints from a long, long time ago. I think of my grandmother. I think of how she, albeit was very Tanzanian, her ancestry dates goes back to Ethiopia. And I think of how that, like, just thinking about, like, looking at Africa on the map and looking at what type of nomadic life that must have been for my ancestors and how they migrated from, that part of Africa down to East Af I mean, obviously to Tanzania, and then, settling where they settled, and, us having, then created families of our own. And now me out in the United States with my Tanza Nigerian American kids. So it's interesting when you look at it that way and you think of it from that point of view.
We have how, I think that's what your mom calls you. So we have, and there you are, like basically, because I think you had studied law and you come from this family that's already got like a rich heritage politically, socially, all of that. How does the whole MTV and music, and
Oh,
how does
thank
that
you.
come into it? Because you were more than just a VJ. I really feel
Thank
like you're one
you.
of the biggest brands, because you were able to everything you were doing, acting, like you killed it on MTV Sugar. I'm so sorry. I was just like, this girl, is there something you can't do? Every time you were hosting shows, like the energy that you had when you were performing, I mean, even close, I mean, everything. Let me ask you a question. What would it take for me to get your attention? You're my kind of guy and I think you're fly. Don't say long, we'll come around. Everything that you did as an entertainer, it just seemed like it was naturally you. But my question is also coming from was your family like a traditional family? Because I know for me, it was like a big thing to kind of transition into quote unquote non-serious things. So for you, how does that all happen? And what is the response from the family? And you know, and how did you know that that was the path for you to take?
Well, initially, so if you know, it's so funny that you said unserious things. The unserious things were always the serious things to us. But, you know, because of how and where we grew up, it's like, you know, I really have to have the plan B. So the plan B is kind of like the plan A for, you know, to keep up appearances and to make sure that the family still somewhat supports what you're doing, right? So I'm going to law school. And then, you know, my father tragically passes away in my first year of law school.
Sorry and, about that.
Yeah, no, it's been 17 years. In retrospect, I think that he did so much in making us so well-rounded. My father was very much into music and the arts, so very much that he would, like my father's, the sound of his presence in the home was him whistling. So he definitely had a great affinity to the arts. He loved music. So he introduced us to so many different performers and artists. He loved the arts. We had a very eclectic home. So to think that one of us or not all of us would fall right into that path is a bit crazy and you know, naive. But we definitely, as Africans growing up in an African home, wanted to have that plan B, plan A type situation where you just do it for, you know, if all else fails. Thank God that our children don't have to do that now and they can seriously hone into whatever it is that they feel is their calling from the beginning. For us, it was a bit more like, you know what, you can have a fallback plan. And I guess it helped us become multitaskers. But for me, from the beginning, during holiday seasons, when we weren't in school, we were performing. We were doing choreography and learning music and playing sports and a part of theater and part of our drama clubs in our prospective schools, our church community. I was singing in the choir. So I know I was always preparing for the next phase. And I'm so grateful that you think that I was a great actress, because I don't think I'm a great actress at all. I thought that was horrible.
No. I honestly, like, I really, like, because I watched and I had to, you know, watch again as we were preparing, because I actually was one of the biggest, I mean, obviously MTV, because I was a channel, was like, but I'll give you guys your props. MTV Sugar, for me, I was like, yeah, no, you guys nailed it on this. And also when MTV got you as a VJ, I'm like, oh, yeah, they nailed it.
Thank you so much. Even though that happened for me, VJing came as a necessity in a time where I, you know, my mother had been a housewife throughout our lives, because it is such an incredible role and an important role for women to have. And, you know, she raised us very well, seeing that my father had a lot of traveling to do. So my mother, once we had gotten to university level, she was now starting to embark on her own entrepreneurial dreams, which I absolutely love. But at the time when dad died, I know for a fact that she wasn't able to properly support the family the way that she would have wanted to. And for me, it was an opportunity for me to delve into what I really wanted to do. And so I said, you know what, Mom, I'm going to try and keep doing this law thing, but I'm going to also try and embark on something else, which is the entertainment industry. And then so I auditioned for VJ Search. And, you know, the rest is history, because it happened so poetically and beautifully. And I'm so grateful for what MTV did for my life, because it really steered me in the path that I wanted to go, you know, and I was dreaming of going, because I'd be that girl in the lectures with my headphones in ear and listening to everything but the lecture. But, you know, I'm so grateful. Yeah. I'm so grateful for God's plan and his ability to put things in place when you are actually not expecting it.
Yeah, I really love that. And it's so important that you mentioned about how it's God's plan, because literally, you know, for the opportunity to come forward where MTV is doing a VJ search in Tanzania, I think many people might not realize like how much of the odds would have been against that. First of all, for a long time, nobody knew if MTB was coming to Africa. That was the one thing. Second of all, because Tanzania is mainly, everybody basically speaks Swahili, you know your people. So let me not embarrass myself with my bad Swahili. You know, there were so many things and, you know, people were surprised. So it really does feel like that was so God ordained,
Definitely.
you know, and it just shows like such a thing of provision. And it's like as though your whole life God has been preparing you right from the grandmother you come from, the parents you come from, right into that. So it feels like your whole life has just been a series of preparation, you know. Yeah, that's just such a powerful place to be.
Honestly, like I couldn't have said it better. From the beginning, it's just been God. God has been ordering my steps, and I'm so grateful.
So Vanessa, you know, outside of all the amazing things that you've done, and we've already established your social and your activism and the amazing family that you came from, there's this whole other side to you that different people were introduced to you, you know, because you got a wider audience once you stepped into music as well. And Tanzania, obviously, like we had discussed, is a country where people speak Swahili. It's not like when you're going to Kenya and it's like some people are mixing it up, you know. Literally, you'll get lost, you know. So you better put your 2 cents of Swahili together. You know, there's that happening, and Bongo flavor is really huge in Tanzania. All of that is happening, and here comes this like cute little dynamite package. She's working with some of the biggest names in East Africa. You're connected to Be Hit Studio. You know, you're working with Ogopa DJs who have basically helped launch so many careers in East Africa. So for us, everything is looking amazing. The single Closer is coming out. Hey, the world is happening, you know? So for us, everything is looking amazing. But I know that behind the scenes, there's always like so many things that are, you know, interesting stories. So what was that era like for you, convincing the guys to be singing in English, all of that? How do you remember all of that?
Honestly, my starts with B Hits and with Ogopa and just, you know, the very early years of my music career were truly just, you know, God really putting me in the right place at the right time, meeting the right people to propel me to my next phase, right? With B Hits, they, you know, shout outs to Hermie B, who was, you know, the founder of the label. He just truly believed that someone could make English Swahili music, like R&B that was, you know, in English and in Swahili and could reach an audience and had a space. And that was, you know, that was the main reasons why I think I started working with them, because they believed and they saw it too. You know, you have to understand that this is something that still lives today. Even though we're talking about, you know, my career in music started over 10 years ago, but even today, there is still a lot of apprehension for English influence in Swahili music, in Bongo Flava. So I was fighting. In the early years, I was fighting to be heard, fighting for an opportunity, fighting for a position. And I was relentless, honestly, because in as much as I did have Swahili music in my catalog, I was kind of put in a little bracket where they're like, she can't be one of us because she's number one, a little too English, not Swahili enough, a little too cultured, not Swahili enough. You know, there were so many barriers that I had to cross and actually give people the understanding that we don't have to be one thing. We can be many things. Thing is, the origin of Swahili in itself, the word Swahili is broken down into is it, it comes from it comes it's a derivative of some Arab influence, which basically means borrowed from. So if you look at Swahili as a culture, it is a culture that is comprised of several other cultures that make this one big melting pot of a culture that we now know and appreciate as Swahili culture, which is ever growing, by the way. So I just really was relentless in understanding who I was and not budging, because if I was going to be true to myself and if I was to achieve, which I did, thank you, God, the things that I did, it was only because I was doing the many things that made me this global artist. it wouldn't have worked any other way, because there were so many talented Swahili artists, but they never seemed to cross the border. They never seemed to cross East Africa. They never seemed to cross into a bigger audience. Now, granted, and you said this earlier, Tanzania is known for its music, but it's kind of more silent on the continent because of, you know, that language barrier. Bear in mind that Swahili is the biggest language on the continent in terms of being spoken by more people than other languages. So it's one of those things where we need enough spokespeople who are unapologetic, but also just not afraid to collaborate and to reach broader audiences. So the challenge was accepted by me 10 plus years ago, and I'm still accepting the challenge today. And I'm just happy. Yeah. I'm just happy to have the opportunity to do so.
I really love that the way that you describe Swahili culture. I don't think I've ever had anybody articulated in that way. You know, just tapping into what you were mentioning with regards to music from Tanzania, I'll give you a bit of insight. On my side, I remember, you know, when I was working with Big Brother Africa, we were always able to tell who was going to win Big Brother Africa based on how Tanzanians were voting.
That's crazy.
Because because Tanzania as a culture, like it always seemed as though Tanzanians, like, yes, everybody was like about Tanzania and supported their own, but Tanzanians authentically were able to pick people and not be, how do I say, like overly patriotic. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was the one country where, and I think that even resonates in the music with all of the different festivals and all of the big artists. We know how many artists have gone to Tanzania and then once they have like a big show in Tanzania, then they become like this big African artist, right?
Yeah.
And I think it speaks to that. It speaks to the way that because of the Swahili culture and people are able to soak things in and to appreciate so much.
Yeah.
That's probably the reason why. But what do you think needs to be done differently, especially with Bongo Flava, because and with the music in Tanzania, do you feel like it needs to be a case of structures? Like, if it were up to you, how would you think that should be done a little bit different? Because as African music is blowing up, you know, we're seeing pockets within the continent, but I feel like so many parts are being left out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so in terms of Tanzania, like, what do you think needs to be done a bit different?
Honestly, first of all, I have to say that I really appreciate Tanzanian music. It sounds sonically so melodic. It's beautiful to the style and sound is very unique to Tanzania, but it's also very eclectic in that if you appreciate a new sound, you will love Tanzanian music. So what needs to happen, honestly, I think a lot of the African music that is global is because there's a lot of a diaspora presence that is listening to the music, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, East Africans, especially Tanzanians, don't migrate. We do not live.
They stay home.
We stay home. We stay home. We live in Tanzania. You know what I mean? There's such a small audience outside Tanzania. So now when you think of Tanzanian music in Tanzania, it's huge. When you think of the Tanzanian pop culture scene in Tanzania, it's huge. But outside of the country and at least the Eastern African region, it doesn't move as much as like West African music or Southern African music for the current trend that we are in right now. And I think what needs to happen is I won't say the structure is incorrect, because the structure is there now. A few years ago, it was not, but it is there now. So we will listen to, like you said, West African music. We will listen to Southern African music. We will have all of those sounds playing across our radio stations, in our clubs, and, you know, across social platforms. It's just that our problem is that we don't have enough people who are outside Tanzania spreading Tanzanian music outside Tanzania.
That's such a great perspective. I never actually thought about just the power of the diaspora, you know? Yeah, that does play like a really huge role. Mm-hmm. Just with regards to still looking at some of the trends in Tanzania, I remember, I think because you, like when you look at social media numbers, there was a time when like Tanzanian people had these amazing numbers and people were like, are they buying followers? What's going on? Tanzania is the only country that was rivaling Nigeria for numbers on social media, okay?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was always like and I always tell people, I'm just like, look, I don't know what's going on in Tanzania, but the people, they follow their people. Mm-hmm. The numbers are huge, mm-hmm. you know? Like for you, what do you think the reason is for that? Because that's also given a lot of people a lot of equity and currency, social currency. And I think that that's also helped shift a lot of the narrative around Tanzania.
Yeah, I think Tanzanians really appreciate homegrown. They really, really do. That's yeah. why I had a lot of, you know, I had a lot of barriers to and hurdles to cross over in the beginning because they didn't feel as if I was homegrown. So I think number one, we truly appreciate our music, our stories, our production, our sports, our culture, our fashion, our language, mm. you know, so we will invest in our things 100%. And when someone co-signs something that's not from our region, but we do appreciate it for its artistic integrity, then that will get the support that Tanzanians can give. Like you said, with respect to, you know, Big Brother and which way mm. Tanzanians were voting at the time. So I think that's number one. There is a true, true, true appreciation for homegrown. Number two, honestly, if I'm being very honest, a lot of Tanzanians are bored. They have a lot of time to waste. They have a lot of time to waste.
Let's go online.
You know, let's go online. Yeah. Let's spend a lot of our time online, gossip and other things, you know, unfortunately, you know, and yeah. Unfortunately, it's a tale of, you know, a community that has, people are not very, for lack of a better word, there's not a lot of readers in our community. So people are more more accustomed to entertainment and arts and, you know, what drives that.
Vanessa, I'm curious, you know, when you started your career, I think that then it would have been mainly Facebook and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. Instagram, I don't know, right? But now with the way that social media has taken over, do you feel like your career would have been different or it would have been easier or more difficult if you started your career now when social media is like everywhere?
Leslie, I promise you, I'm so grateful for the time in which I started my career because it was a time where talent could actually rise above noise. There's a lot of yeah. noise on social media. You know, sometimes we make people who don't need to be famous. Sometimes we give yeah. platforms to people who are destructive, and not only to the community, but also to self. And social media has that yeah. power to give people platforms where, unbeknownst to themselves, sometimes they're, you know, really, really, you know, it's very detrimental to self. So I'm so grateful for the time in which I came out because it was at the brink. It was a good cusp time where it was yeah. like you could still listen to music on the radio and consume that way and still have a genuine separation between talent and the music and, you know, the person. So there was enough of a distance for a person, for an artist to have the ability to purely put out their craft and also just take some time off and be separated. Where now there's the thirst for, I need more, I want to see more. And, you know, can he or she give me more, you know, in terms of for the mm-hmm. consumer. So it's a very, very, very like the consumers want more. And it's very tasking on the talent. And sometimes I watch a few, so like there's some novelty acts that we have across the continent who from the beginning of their careers, and I'll give an example of someone like Asha. Asha is mm-hmm. one of those artists who is just so pure in her music and in her style and her sound. Yeah. It's just so authentic to her herself. And she can go and disappear for years and come back and, you know, be able to put out a body of work and it gets tremendous acclaim because of just the way that she's managed to stand true in her identity. And there's not a unhealthy desire to latch onto her brand, you know, and yeah. and her stories that are not music related about her. But for us, at least for me, in the time that I came out, there was a desire to see what I was wearing and talk about what I was doing outside of the music. And so it's a blessing and a curse, but I truly think that I'm grateful for the time in which I came. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Oh, that's such a, I mean, I love like how you articulated that. And even when you mentioned Asha, for example, the way you described how she goes in and out, like in her own world, that's kind of like how Sade is, right? Just disappears. And then she arrives and I'm like, she's here. And then she goes, you know? And I know that she's one of your big musical influences as well.
Yes, I really do appreciate her. For me, in this phase of my artistry, I wanted to take control of my, I wanted to take control of my brand a little more, in that I personally have taken a back seat from the music industry because of certain things that I feel didn't align with my spiritual beliefs. But as at the same time, I needed to take a break for my mental health because, as you have mentioned, social media and just, I was in a, I came out in a time where I created such a huge brand. Social media aided in that. And it wasn't healthy for me as a woman, as a daughter, as a Christian. It was not healthy for me because I was getting lost in what I felt was needed. And there was so much comparison. There was so much. And honestly, a lot of it, like I'm saying, a lot of it can be self-inflicted, but there was never a boundary in separating the art and the brand and this person. And so I needed to take a backseat. And so now when I think about like what I want to do in terms of my next music move, and obviously everything is, you know, according to the will and the desire of God and what he has written out for me. But my next music move is going to be in a way like Asha. I don't have to fully invest my person, but I can give the art and let it just be art and just separate myself from industry and the constant desire to requirements to promote and push and push and push. And I think there's just an unhealthy way of, you know, of existing for a human.
No, thank you so much for just sharing honestly about that. You know, I think, you know, sometimes there's always this perception, especially with somebody like you who's got like incredible numbers on social media. And it's always like, it just seems like as though you have this whole thing under control. And everybody from the outside looking in is looking at your life. They're like, she's doing all these amazing things. She's hanging out with Jay-Z and Kanye. You know, all of these great things are happening. But for you to be so honest about, you know, what happens behind the success, I don't think that, you know, that many people really understand that the price you have to pay for that level of success, there is a price, you know. That's why I'm always so, whenever I hear people talking about like, oh, they want to do this, they want to do that, I'm always like, I really hope it's what God has called you to. Because if not, this machine and this monster is going to swallow you up. And the worst thing you can lose is yourself, you know. So I just think it's so powerful that you actually share that, because, you know, many people I know do deal with that, but they would just not be open about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really thank God that I had the guidance of a partner who was also in the industry who could actually like dissect what it was I was going through. Because once you're in it, you don't even know. It just doesn't stop, you know. So COVID was a blessing and a curse. It gave me the time to just sit back and just assess everything, you know, and look at my life from a very still place. And that was a very healthy halt that I needed. And it, you know, it brought me into my next level. You know, I really didn't even know, I didn't have time to hear myself when I was working. I was nonstop for over 15 years. So it was very healthy. That's for me. I know, it was very healthy for me to take a stop, like a standstill, and say, what do you want to do right now? Do you still have the same desires you had 10 years ago? Do you still want to do the things you want to do? Like, so for example, like it came to the point that everything that I wanted to do that I achieved was no longer fun. And I said, then what am I doing this for? You know what I mean? So I had the number one singles. I had the sold out tours. I had the amazing accolades. And I said, okay, next is the Grammy. I said, when I get there, will I even enjoy it? Will I be present enough to actually understand the moment? Will I be able to really say, okay, here I am? But I wasn't. Everything was, okay, I'm in the moment. I'm thinking about the next moment and, you know, what I want to do in the next moment. It's like, there's no joy in that. And true joy
For
doesn't
sure.
come from achieving things like that. It really truly does not.
Yeah.
So it took
Yeah.
me a real halt, and it took me a real self assessing. And I'm so grateful to God because, like you said, most people do not get to come out of the other side like this. You
They
know,
don't.
it's more
Yeah.
tragic, it's more painful, it's
Yeah.
more destructive. And I thank God so very much that I'm here to talk about it and give people the opportunity to actually
Amen.
take some time and say,
Yeah.
hey, what do you want to do really? Is this really what you want to do? Is this still the dream? And is it happening in the way that you want it
Yeah.
to happen?
And you know what I love about that is you know, having the courage to be like something that was working before. Perhaps it's not the season for me to keep doing it. Perhaps I
Yes.
need to refocus and just, you know, redirect my life, maybe forever, maybe for a season, you
Yes.
know. Because even when you said about, you know, some people not coming on the other side, you know, in South Africa, there have been a lot of people, you know, what happened to Double HP, you
Yes.
know, Ricky Rick, all of that,
Yes.
like. And it's a very real thing. I think because people sit there and they're like, oh my gosh, you're famous. Like, what are your issues? But it's like, it's hectic, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I really just hope that, you know, what you, with you sharing, that you really are able to touch someone's life because people are literally, to use the slang, dealing with the most, you know?
Yeah.
It's actually like pretty hectic out there.
Yeah.
Now, with regards to COVID and you saying about how it was a blessing and the curse, you know, and or it was like the best times and the worst of times, all of that, you know,
Yeah.
I feel like as though COVID for me, when I think about the world, it's like everything got redirected, you know. It was
Yes.
like this almost this reset.
Yeah.
The world as we knew it has never been before. I always tell people, I'm like, look, if you're expecting things pre-COVID, please just respect your life.
Yeah.
It's not happening, you
It's
know.
not.
And also know that anything can happen,
Yeah.
you know, because I mean, what happened during COVID, we were all really shocked. I think that that was a time also where you actually moved to the States,
Yeah.
or had you moved a little bit before?
Just a little
Do you think
before.
that it made it easier? Because you're somebody who obviously loves Tanzania, you know, did it
Yeah.
make it easier that you were in the States and like you couldn't fly in and out, you know, you just had to kind of
Oh my
be there?
gosh. Yeah, you know, it's so crazy. And again, this is God because I had flown back to Tanzania early 2020. And this is right before COVID lockdown in terms of just like the borders closed in different countries. And I had flown back to film a commercial and I filmed it and, you know, finished everything. And I turned back and I came back to Atlanta and I was here. And literally a week later, the United States closed its borders.
Imagine.
Literally a week later. And I said, oh my God. For many reasons, I was so grateful to God because number one, we didn't have a warning. There was like, you know, sometimes when they're
Yeah.
doing
There
such,
was no like,
no, there was
yeah.
no ready, set, go. There was none of that. It was like, okay,
Yeah.
from tomorrow, you cannot leave this country. So number one, it
Yeah.
gave me the real stillness that I needed. Obviously, my husband and I had just started. I mean, we had been together for a few months, but it was needed for us to be together in stillness. So it was so necessary for us to be together in that time to learn each other, but also to assess our personal lives, each and every single one of us in our different ways. So I'm so grateful for the way COVID happened. You said it best. Like, if you're thinking of a life pre-COVID, forget it.
I really love that, and I because you've mentioned him a few times, and I'm always careful how I talk about people's relationships, you know, and
Yeah.
everything. But can I just say, honestly speaking,
Yes.
when I first found out that you guys were seeing each other, and you know, the news was kind of buzzing on social media, it was like this thing. I'm like, oh yeah, you know, you could just see like the joy that was radiating, you know, like you could see there was absolute like kind of joy and that kind of thing, you know.
Thank
But
you.
it must have been a bit challenging, and even now, because I know that you do quite a bit of work together, your business partners.
Yeah.
You've got two beautiful children. Hey, those Yoruba outfits you're wearing, madam.
Thank
Hey,
you.
Yoruba queen, what? All of that and everything, and even with you guys working on an app together and so forth. In the world that we live in now, and with social media and this whole thing of feeding the machine, how do you and Ro decide how much you're going to share, what you're not going to share? You know, what are
Yeah.
kind of those decisions that are made, and even where your children are concerned? Because it is like really delicate, but you guys have managed to just, it just comes out in such a beautiful and pure way,
Yeah.
and nothing goes out that you're not trying to have put out. So what are the kind of conversations, how are those decisions made? Was there any anxiety around it?
Oh my gosh, yes. So with regards to us, we wanted to be able to control the narrative because we are a very much in the public eye, but we're also very spiritual. So we understand that there are things that are not just in the physical that we have to really protect. And sometimes these things happen because of us overexposing things. So we are very, even just our relationship, you know, certain things, we know that there's a calling on us to inspire young people to believe in marriage and believe in family and believe in commitment, right? And just be God-fearing at the same time. So because we know that that is a calling on our lives, we wanted to create a safe space for us to do that. So this is why we have our For the Better app, which is a wellness app, but does give exclusive content to people who care for it and people who want to better themselves in one way or another. So through the app, we started off with affirmations and just positive wellness and stories and health and healthy. We share quirky, healthy ways in which we live our lives in terms of just food we eat and supplements that we take and our workout routines to mantras that we believe in. And now we move on to spiritual growth, that we have a Bible study every week in the app. So that's with regards to us as a couple. With our kids, you'll notice that for the first 2 years of my son's life, no one ever had seen his face. And that was very intentional. Yeah. You know, the reason being, number one, okay, social media is a brutal, brutal place. And he didn't ask for that. He didn't ask for that type of exposure. Yeah. So we wanted to protect him, again, from a spiritual place, but also just, you know, just give him some time. You know, it's just like, we didn't believe in that. And, you know, we didn't even have a timeline for it. We just said, you know, when the time is right, when we feel the time is right, we will do that. So as you saw the video of us walking in our African garbs, looking as a unit.
I love that picture.
Thank you. That was the first time anyone had seen anyone, at least on social media, had seen our son and our daughter. For now, we honestly, it's just whatever feels right in a way that isn't too, we don't overdo anything. If it feels right, it feels right. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And that's it. But you know, we obviously cover them in the blood of Jesus all the time. That's really what it is. That's truly just what it is, to protect them the best way we can. And knowing very well that in that, we still do have a responsibility in our calling to make people believe in and want to come back to a little bit of what is the desire for God for our world, I guess.
You know what I'm loving about all of this? When people initially saw that, you know, that V and Rotimi were dating, from the aesthetic perspective, people are like, oh yeah, this is a cute couple. You know, like that's what the world is thinking. You guys look like you're happy and everything, you know? But it's sounding more and more that it's like there's such purpose, and it's sounding as though like maybe your faith was part of the reason that actually got you guys together as a couple, you know?
Yeah.
And I ask that because, you know, so many people, I also believe in like having the right marriage partner. I believe in all of that.
Yeah.
But I believe in making sure that it's the one that God has chosen for you.
Absolutely.
You seem very intentional. So for you, how did you know, like, what was the moment that you actually knew, and how big of a role would you say that your faith and Rotimi's faith played in being able to put you guys together?
I will say this. I will say that there is no Ro and V without God. It doesn't exist.
Love that.
That's point blank, period. It does not exist, because certain things you can hear and feel and want, but without God, it's not there. So I can tell you that early on, I'm talking about like first week into just spending real time with him and really like starting to date. I knew, because I felt it deep within my heart, that this was the person that I was supposed to be with. This conviction doesn't happen for everyone. And sometimes it's not even the voice of God. And sometimes it's not even God. Because at the end of the day, sometimes we want our own things as human beings, and we try and rush God's process. And that's not the way it is, right? So I'll say this for a fact, that even though I knew, it's not always that way for everybody, right? Marriage is a godly matter. And the thing about the world and culture has tried to change that which is of God to make fit into culture, and that doesn't exist. It's not correct and it won't work. But without, that's why I come back to the first thing I said, without God, there is no Roe and V. Everything that we do is ordained by instruction, obedience, and dying to self. Because in as much as you'll meet a person who, you know, obviously you won't find someone who checks all your boxes, but definitely matches the person that you feel you see yourself with, you will get to a point where people evolve and they change and things happen and life happens. And through it all, you're going to need the book of instruction by the person who created marriage to keep it together. Exactly. So it's so many things. And without God, there's no marriage. There's no us.
I love that. I really love that. You know, and also just with regards to now raising children, you know, it's obviously very clear that you're raising your children really strong in faith.
Yeah.
But mixing the cultures, I love that, you know, because I think both your children have like Swahili names, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, no,
you
know? They're actually Yoruba names.
Are they Yoruba names?
Yeah, my daughter's first name is a Swahili name. Imani means faith, but both of their middle names are Yoruba names.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, because I know most Yoruba people, they're like, oh, they must have like all the names, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like those kind of long names and everything.
Yeah.
So for you, like, it's such a beautiful place to also be, to be able to mix the different cultures. Because I know you guys had a book together about learning Swahili. How are you balancing Yoruba culture and Swahili culture? And obviously, you know, living in the diaspora and everything. How are you guys bringing that blend together? And I love the way that I always see Rose speaking Swahili, you know, every so often. I'm just like, hey.
Okay, what Swahili words have you learned?
Don't put me on the spot.
Come on now.
Pole.
Pole,
baby. Pole, baby.
I hear that all day.
Pole, baby.
Pole.
Pole.
Yamani.
Yamani.
I hear that all day. Yo.
What's the one I go like this when we're watching basketball and, you know, Westbrook is being Westbrook. I'm a new NBA fan.
That's how you feel.
What do I go? Ma.
Mama Yangu. Mama Yangu.
See, this two sides of this thing don't know what I'm saying right now.
So go to the YouTube side.
So YouTube, Mama Yangu. Baby, tell me what Mama Yangu means now.
Mama Yangu means like my mama. But it's like an exclamation.
It's like, oh my God.
It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yamani means, oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, figured out the translation. It's something I didn't know all my life.
Yeah.
And Polesana means sorry.
Yeah, I think one thing that we're doing really well is that so Ro is first generation Nigerian. So his parents raised him in the United States in a very African home. So he definitely has a lot of African culture instilled within him, which is beautiful, but he's also very American, right?
Yeah.
There are elements of the African culture, like our food. The food in the home is African food. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some of our traditional and customary beliefs are like definitely prevalent in the home. But again, they're living in America. So you have to give them a good balance of both, right? And then I speak Swahili to them and I'll sing in Swahili to them and I will scold them in Swahili. So when you ask my kids the Swahili words, they know it's wewe. And acha, which is stop, and yamani, which is my goodness. So, you know, they
Jamani.
Have a little, yamani.
Hey, I'm
you know.
Tanzania.
So it's all those little words that they have, and then, you know, they eat Swahili food and Yoruba food, which I, you know, so Rose Mom was so gracious to teach me how to cook a few of the main dishes. And then so it's a melting pot of culture. But then again, they're American kids. So, you know, truly African American kids. So, you know, giving them the opportunity to have the best of all cultures is such a, again, this speaks of, you know, our heritage. Me being, you know, the nomadic African that am, and, you know, them being part of that lineage too.
Now, is there something for you in your life that you fundamentally used to believe that with time and with things that have happened, you've absolutely changed your mind on?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I fundamentally believed that I wasn't a mother.
Oh, really?
And yes, I never wanted kids. I never wanted kids. That absolutely changed when I met my husband and when we got together and you just found somebody who you thought, my goodness, it's only right. So that changed. And then I was a feminist. I was a big feminist, but with time, I don't believe in modern day feminism at all. I think it's very tainted. And I think that there are so many things that are anti-Christ in feminism and not biblical. So that's changed. Yeah. And I also believed, and this is going to be a little bit controversial, maybe, but I also believed that at some point when you leave your parents' home and your parent and you're an independent, full-blown adult, that you don't really need your parents, and that it's fine even because I lost my father very young, and then I left home and I started working for MTV at 18. So, you know, I've been, you know, independent of my mother for a very long time. I have never needed my mother more then I need her now, because at each stage I realize that you need your parents. You need a mother or father figure or someone who has the ability to advise you from a wise, loving, maternal or paternal or authoritative space. You really need that. And these are some of the things that I'm learning in this stage. Yeah.
Even when you're talking about like feminism and so forth, I always tell like people, like when you're in East Africa, like the woman, we like, it's just so different, you know? And you know, in Uganda, like we kneel and everything. It's just so different. Yeah, like there's such a beauty to being like gentle, and you know, it's such a, and it's so hard to find yourself in this world. I'm like, when I'm in Uganda, like my sisters are like, oh my gosh, are you the kneeler in chief? I'm like, yes, that is me. The kneeler in chief, you know, but I love being able to celebrate and articulate my culture. And I also think that there's absolutely nothing wrong, you know, having your own authentic voice does not take away from, you know, from who you are. And I just think that it's so, I love the way that you just candidly share, you know, because it's not like quite a popular opinion, but it's actually something that I totally agree with. Like, I absolutely agree with it. I think that there's so much that's come into the idea of feminism that is just like, yeah, I'm like, I don't know if we should be taking it that far, but
it's quite, can I say, honestly, it's quite detrimental to our young women. And I wish I knew better earlier. There were certain things I wouldn't have propagated as much as I did, but I pray to God that, you know, we're able to just like personally, each and every single one of us in our own way, find authenticity in the things that we support, and not because it's pop culture driven.
Yeah, no, most definitely. So Vanessa, you have like, you've lived like, and you're living an amazing life. You know, I love all of the transitions and the journeys, and just even like, it just seems like as though throughout your life, there's a consistent like realization of purpose, which I think is so important, because purpose is the thing that keeps us going at the end of the day, right? Like if you know why you're here, it makes a huge difference, because the things don't matter. It's the purpose and it's the calling that you have on your life. For you, what are the next kind of things that you want to be doing? How do you see your life for the next few years? What are the kind of things you want to do career-wise and that kind of thing?
Wow, I love this question, because I wake up every morning and I'm like, God, what is the purpose for today? Because I think I was very driven on attaining certain goals throughout my life. Earlier on in my career, I was very driven on goals and very driven on, we're about to achieve this within this quarter and that quarter and this quarter. I think more now it's about being the best version of myself as a person. I used to say that, but now I'm talking about like truly, truly as a person, like myself. Like there's certain things that you'll discover about yourself in marriage that you're like, damn, I don't like that. I got to change that. You know, I got to work on that. I got to be better at doing this, and I got to work on my patience, and I got to work, you know, motherhood will also test you in ways that you've never been tested. So I think that my purpose right now is really truly as a woman, as a woman and as a Christian woman, as a God-fearing woman, there are certain things that I really want to grow in and personally devote myself to bettering myself and being more Christ-like every day. That's in terms of like my personal journey. In my work and in my career, I really am excited to use my voice more. Whether it's as a vocalist or whether it's as a change leader in church or in community or in, you know, I don't know. And then lastly, I'm so excited. My organization, my foundation, and I are working towards building hundreds of wells. So I'm excited in giving water. Water is life, and water has been here since before time. And I'm excited to be able to do that for our communities in Africa. And, you know, just I have a deep passion to build these wells across the continent. And I'm really driven about that. So these are my next steps.
I love that. And is the foundation, that's Udada.
Udada.
Foundation,
yes. Yes.
Udada sister.
Yes.
See, my Swahili is,
you're doing good,
my little
sister.
Swahili is pulling together. It's being pulled together. But what was the initial decision behind having this foundation? You know what I've noticed in Tanzania? That so many Tanzanian women are about communities. You know, they're about focusing on communities. Like you guys have got some great women who are doing that kind of thing.
Yeah. So we founded Udada in, I think, 2014, if I'm not mistaken. It's been running for a long time, and it started with my MTV days. So I'll take you back a little bit. When I first started working at MTV, I was always so passionate about like using my voice and my platform. So before blogging was a thing for real, I was blogging with MTV Staying Alive, which is MTV's, you know, HIV and AIDS Foundation. And so I would go to like grassroots level organizations to these high level meetings, speaking for the youth, you know, and just presenting opportunities for the youth to share their stories and, you know, aiding in vaccinations and, you know, doing a whole bunch of stuff with young people, you know. And it was fun. Initially, it was fun because I wanted to be able to write about it and to share the news about it and to talk about it and to just, you know, thought provoking conversation, which was needed. And then over time, I was like, you know what? I love that we're doing this at a high level with, you know, the United Nations and, you know, all these other high level, you know, NGOs. But then I said, how can I do this when I'm not being invited to these high level meetings in my own community? So we founded Udada because I've always been so passionate about young women and girls. And I'm always looking for ways to help in the plight, you know, and to assist. And it started off with vaccines for HPV. And then it moved to, you know, just giving young women and girls sanitary towels in, you know, across the continent. I mean, across the country, Tanzania, and education about sexual reproductive health. And then, you know, fighting against female genital mutilation. And then it just became so many things. There were so many things. There were, every single day, there was something else that needed to be talked about, touched on, shared. And at the time, you know, I had so many brands were excited to join in if, you know, they were partnering with V Money. So that's what I did. I did this as much as I could. And then I took a break when I moved here to, you know, to have kids, and, you know, COVID happened and so on and so forth. And right before my very last project was a lighting project. And we had provided electricity to a secondary school in Arusha, actually. And they, you know, the whole school was fitted with solar energy, and it was such an amazing opportunity for them to still to date have the electricity that they need to be able to further their education in times when they needed it. So it's small little initiatives, small little pockets of community work that is very, very important to me and to these young girls. And so then thereafter, you know, because I had been invited to a lot of water you know, wash programs, I decided that I wanted to embark on this project to build wells. And I've started slowly with small little ones in Dar es Salaam. And that's my next phase. That's my next phase. I'm doing that with the hopes that we can build hundreds of wells across the continent.
I love that. And I actually have to put it in perspective, because I know that you're saying that you were just doing your little thing here and there. I'm going to give you your credit where it's due. I think that the blog that you, yeah, the blog that you, you actually had a blog called Dynamite's Mission.
Yes.
And you literally were like spending time because MTV Staying Alive is, you know, what the work that was being done was so important. You literally were taking people who are not able to have these conversations, people who are not able to meet the people that you were meeting. You had met Desmond Tutu and all of that. And you were sharing that experience. And it was at a time when people were not talking about it so much. So it was so powerful. Like, it was just really great the way that you used it. And your foundation, Udada Foundation, I think there was like a, you were nominated for something. I'm trying to remember the award, like the Crabs Award. But before that, Crabs Montana, I think it was. Please correct me.
Yes.
But before that, that nomination, I remember, well, actually during the whole ceremony and everything, the event days, you actually sat with the vice president of Liberia. You sat with a few first ladies. So, Vanessa, it was not like a small thing. Like, you literally had gone all out with everything, you know? Is this such a testament to when you're fully doing something for the right reasons and you're behind it? Like, everything will just open up for you. So I just felt that I had to share that. Look, she's talking about these things like it's a small thing. It was not a small thing. This girl, as tiny as she is, she was like moving mountains. Like, you were everywhere that you went. And I think you really need to be celebrated for that.
Oh, man, I give God the glory. I thank God that I was able to do that. I want to do more.
You know what? It is, the best is always yet to come. Amen. I think the last will be greater than the past. So
of course.
Look out for it, girl.
Yes, ma'am.
Vanessa, I just wanted to thank you so much for your time. You know, for me, when it comes to selecting guests, I'm so intentional about it. So I just feel like it's just, you know, to be able to speak to you is so powerful. And I feel as though where you are in your life, like, things are just, yeah, I just love what it is that you're showing, and things are really going to start changing. But for me personally, I appreciate you being on the show. I know that it's not, you know, people aren't very easy with interviews. So I really appreciate you honoring it and all of that. But I also appreciate that I know that you've had a lot of personal growth, as you've explained. And there's things about, you know, before that you're kind of like, I wish I hadn't done that. But I want to say, fundamentally, within the industry, you're honestly one of the people that has just always remained grounded. I know very few people in the industry who have, you know, who have the kind of like a, you know, where people feel like safe in their space, and you're one of those people.
Oh,
I really think that,
so
it's like, I've always heard like great things. And at the beginning, I made a joke about how you were sunshine, but literally you radiate like this vibrance. You, from the beginning, from when you came out, you radiate this vibrance and this joy. So it's so exciting to see you just be able to, you know, to continue that. So I don't think it's any surprise, all of the amazing things that are happening in your life. So, and I really just appreciate the conversation. I appreciate your time. And I appreciate that ever since, you know, you've just always remained consistent. You've remained who you are, you know, the good parts and everything. So thank you very much.
Oh my God, what a great, like, that is so kind of you. I'm so grateful. That just made me smile so big. Thank you. I appreciate you so much. It's nice to, I was saying to my husband, I don't usually do podcasts, but I was saying to my husband, Leslie's always been so good to me. So I have to do this for her, and I have to do this because I believe in the platform. So I'm so, so honored. It's so nice to see you go from strength to strength. I just want to ask God to continue blessing you. Thank you for your obedience. Who knows where this is reaching, but I'm just so grateful that I was able to do this. I know we had a few hiccups in the beginning, and you know, maybe the enemy didn't want this, but we managed to make it happen. And I'm so grateful. I truly am so grateful. You know, if you need anything, you know, I'm always here. So thank you so much.
I do is, baby, 'cause you trust me. I'm umbakose kukuleta wangu mimi.
Rather than going back and doing a lot of the charity that you see a lot of people doing, but why not give these individuals with this extraordinary ability the chance to be able to make money for themselves, to be where I've been? Because I knew they were there, so I'm going to go there and find the best athlete, because I know this athlete here can come to America through this sport. Because one person who comes out of that environment is feeding 100 people back home.